Hello, everybody, and welcome to Kentucky Ag Matters, a podcast designed to inform and educate both producers and consumers about all matters affecting agriculture. Special thanks to WKDZ, your Ag Edge Network, for their help in bringing you this show. On this week's show, David, Jay, and Vicki will visit with Hancock County Ag Agent Evan Tate as they discuss the upcoming Midwest Beef Summit. And as always, we'll wrap things up with this week's timely tip. Thanks so much for joining us, and we hope you enjoy our show. Hello, everybody.
Hey, Jay.
How are y'all doing today?
Doing good.
Before we move into our visit with Evan and talk about the Beef Summit, we probably need to give a little attention to the current avian influenza outbreak that's going on. And David, I think you've got some information you want to share with producers.
Yeah, you know, this is something that affects all of our counties here close. And, you know, if folks are not familiar with where we're at, we're kind of situated in between far western Kentucky and central Kentucky. And we've actually had a positive avian influenza outbreak here in Webster County, so it's all close to us. McLean County, where I'm at, is actually the second largest poultry producer in the state. I think Graves County is first. So right. This is something that affects us all. And, you know, hopefully we can, somehow mitigate the problems that we're going to have if that happens. I mean, that's a pretty serious issue if we have a lot of outbreaks and we lose a lot of birds. Some of the smaller houses hold like 25,000 birds, and then some of the larger ones in the 30,000. And then I think what we've had outbreak-wise has been turkey houses. So we have several of those across the county, Vicki, that and you've had more dealings with the APHIS folks than anybody. But what's your take on it?
Well, it is the big takeaway message needs to be, this is serious. This isn't something that you need to take lightly, like you said, David, because we are dealing with the high path avian influenza, which when that happens, then we're talking about, that's when USDA pretty much comes in, a team comes in, and because, you know, the main goal of that's going to be eradication, to stop this. And so, poultry producers really need to be really cautious and don't be congregating together. Don't be traveling in circles. Don't be, don't be going to the same places, because it can spread so quickly that we really need to put in place some of those extra securities to make sure we keep your farm clean and hopefully keep it that way. And so, it is important. And, David, did you want to talk about the securities to put into place?
Sure. You know, USDA has a website called Protect the Flock or Defend the Flock. And there's a lot of biosecurity type information on there. You know, obviously we want to keep our visitors to a minimum. We want to wash our hands before and after coming in contact with live poultry. We need to have disposable boots and coveralls and foot baths and all that stuff, you know. And if you want to go out and check the chickens and walk your poultry houses, why do that in one vehicle and do that with one set of clothes? And then if you're going to go to town, you're going to run to town, change clothes, get in a different vehicle. We really need to pay attention to biosecurity issues. Anytime we're entering or exiting our poultry facilities, we need to be a all-in, all-out type deal. Obviously there's not very many poultry houses that have showers, but there you can change your clothes, you can put on some coveralls, and you can leave those coveralls at the poultry house, that type thing, and boots and things as well. You know, keep them in your truck that you're actually driving to and from the poultry house. But if you go to town or you go anywhere else, you know, you need to be sure to change clothes and vehicles and that type thing. We need to clean and disinfect all that equipment. And because when they have to come in and depopulate a house, that's a pretty serious issue. And not only the time that you lay out from having to depopulate and clean and disinfect and all that kind of stuff, that's going to be, you may miss a flock or two when you're trying to do that. So a pretty serious issue that we're having to deal with here locally.
Certainly. And, we're talking primarily to commercial producers, we're talking to people with chicken houses. But when we think about who this affects, it's anybody that has any type of fowl that's within that, what is it, 6 mile radius? Is that what it is? 10 kilometer
radius? It's a 6.2 mile radius. And Jay, I'm glad you brought that up because if you happen to be, that's called that controlled zone, which is in that 6.2 mile radius from the premise farm that has where there's infection found. And there's going to be folks coming around knocking on the doors. So don't be surprised about that if you happen to be in that area, because they are trying to locate those backyard flocks to make sure, one, that they're protected, but number two, to make sure that we're not spreading it further. So don't be surprised about that.
Yeah, and be sure to report if you've got any problems with sick birds or anything like that. Call your veterinarian or your state veterinarian's office. USDA has a toll-free line that you can call, 1-866-536-7593, and that's on that Defend the Flock website. But be sure to report that information, because we need to get that information in as soon as possible and, see about doing what we need to do to get that fixed. So.
One last point, too, that I want to add, for extension folks, this is the time of year that, extension offices are having grower meetings, and they're having these meetings for you all to come in and learn. And if you are a poultry producer, especially if you're close to one of those infected areas, as bad as I hate to say it, I would discourage you from coming right now, just because you don't want to pick something up, take it back to the farm. We're doing everything we can at the extension offices, doing the boot clean, baths, and trying to mitigate that from happening. But you might just want to not attend those at this time.
And be sure to, and be sure if you need that training, be sure to contact your extension office and your agent and let them know. And they'll be glad to work with you and try to get that training for you or get the information that you may have missed, because that is something that is much more serious. And, we want to get you that information, but this avian influenza is much more serious than that. So
it is serious. And the one thing right now for us to realize is it's an evolving situation.
Yes.
We know where certain infected flocks are right now. We know that flock depopulation is going on in certain places. That doesn't mean that it's isolated to there right now. So I think probably it'll warrant us doing an entire show on it next week. Just talk about this topic and keep it on the forefront of people. So with that, I think we'll probably just move on in. We needed to give a few minutes to that because of the seriousness of it, but we'll move right on in and talk to our guest, Mr. Evan Tate. He's the Ag and Natural Resources Agent in Hancock County. Welcome, Evan.
Thanks.
Tell us a little bit about yourself and where home is and all that good
stuff. Home is Hardinsburg, Breckinridge County. Primarily a beef background. We've diversified a little bit with some hogs here as of late, but I tell everybody my first word was bull, and I've kind of been in the cow business ever since. And so something like that, yeah. Took a little stint in college. Actually, my master's thesis and all that stuff was actually done in hogs, but for the most part, cattle marketing, cattle nutrition, and animal health as far as a previous career to my extension time. So,
yeah, well, and Evan, and I don't know if a lot of people knew it or not, but Evan is T8 Cattle Company is the name of his home farm, and he's probably is more famous for pork products than he is for cattle products at the present time.
It's sad but true.
But it's turned into a good little family business for him, and that's just another example of folks' diversification and doing that type of thing. So, it's a great avenue for Evan and his family to be in. So we're glad that he's doing that, and it's providing some insight into some of those things that we may not have the information.
You know, that's a good point, and I think it's a point to remember for extension agents everywhere. We all do not have the same backgrounds, but when we clock out at the end of the day and go home and live what we actually work and do every day, it really gives us skin in the game. And folks, I think, tend to give you a little more validity when you're talking about things. They know you're involved in it, and they tend to take a little more stock in what you have to say.
You know, I wholeheartedly agree. I had this conversation on another radio program this week. Just the simple fact of our experience through that and growing that business. We've now built calculators that I'm using every day in my extension job based on that information, and we're working across county lines with other producers, helping them build financial calculators for those type things. And so would have overlooked a lot of the cost, wouldn't have understood the process to the detail that we do, you know, had it not been for what we do after we close the doors, you know. And so same thing with cows, right? I mean, you go home to a cow herd, you go home to learn a lesson every night. And so the hogs have been the same thing for us.
Well, and I think, too, on the family side of it, you mentioned the family farm. And, you know, I think that's an important thing to bring up, too, because we know that, you know, a lot of farms are still family farms. And how better to teach your kids a lot of, well, not just work ethic, but there's a lot of lessons to be learned on the farm when you're raising kids, too, that you're not going to, you're not going to always learn those somewhere else. So I think that's important too.
Yeah, we're working on sales training right now with our oldest one. So we're trying to get her to form sentences correctly and work the word pork burger into every conversation if she can and things like that, you know. But no, it's been a great experience with those guys.
And a very accomplished showman. She is, I have seen her over the last couple of years, 2-3 years really. She is in the sheep showing in the summertime, and Evan and their family do a great job with that. So bringing them all along, and I think your son's been showing last year and got another one coming along. So, you know, hopefully the whole family will get involved before it's all said and done.
Yeah, it's been the sheep showing thing is a full-time job outside of our full-time jobs, you know, but we've enjoyed it. And you know, and she's just one of those kids that's enjoyed it and kind of come to it natural, and it's been fun to watch her grow. And all through that, I mean, that Clover Bud and 4-H program, right? I mean, we all work with those things in our job, but I think we all see the importance of them, especially on the livestock side of what it actually does to future careers in agriculture and the basis that they get for those through those programs. I mean, I sit here and watch this guy here. He used to gripe at me at hog shows, you know, about my hogs being loose and whatnot. And
you wouldn't do that, would you?
And he may have rolled his eyes at me a few times in my first talk. Matter of fact, I remember one very specifically. But now it's all those mentors that we had growing up through that 4-H program, you know, or maybe they're coworkers now, but they're still mentors today. And so they all, when it come time to diversify and go in the hog business, guess who I called, you know? And so that was all contacts back to 4-H and FFA time there, and, you know, very thankful for my time.
A lot of valuable relationships are built in the show ring, regardless of what species you may be in, if that's something that you enjoy doing. I mean, lots of valuable relationships.
I always kid people and tell them I found most of my ex-girlfriends at a cattle show, you know? Didn't find my wife there, but I found most of my ex-girlfriends anyway.
I grew up showing horses, and I would concur.
Yeah. Well, I'm the odd one out because I didn't show livestock. So, but I do respect it, and I do have I enjoy it. I think it's good for everybody, parents, kids, spectators. You know, I think there's just a lot to be learned, and you know, you mentioned building relationships, and we hear that, we say that a lot. Building relationships and I think that's key leading into what Evan's going to talk about today with the Midwest Beef Summit. You know, this was something, Evan, you started a few years ago, and it's grown, but it's, you know, it's a lot of that is because of the relationships that you had built over the years in your previous career, and then with extension, and maybe even back to your livestock showing days. I'm not sure, but you know, to be able to put a program like this together.
Yeah, it's, so I guess all my time in industry and watching and visiting with cow herds all across the East and part of the West, really, it was just really always concerning to me that our cow-calf producers weren't, we were always worried about our outputs and not our inputs as much. And so maybe that, And quite honestly, David, it probably changed the way we breed cows at home. But you get to looking at what we had as far as educational material and our understanding of genetics and evaluations and EPDs and whatnot. And we were all focused on one side of the curve and not the other. And so this one kind of, this conference and the idea behind it, it's got a little tagline. It's called Building the Profitable Cow. And the concept behind it is how do we build a cow that will last long enough to pay for herself? And better yet, how do we build a cow that is actually profitable at the end of the day? And so the underlying theme, this will be the third session of that, has always been building that maternal component and not necessarily worrying about what goes out the gate, but essentially being able to corral cost and keep them in check with market forces like they are today.
Yeah, I mean, you know, how important is building that maternal side? I mean, it's, you know, it's just second to none as far as I'm concerned, you know, as far as being able to, you know, if those cows milk good and you do a decent job with forages and those type things, you know, how much heavier can that calf be? You know, those type things, those genetic decisions. And Evan and I have had numerous genetic discussions about different things, and he helped advise me on some bulls to breed to and some different things of this nature because of the situation that we're in. So, you know, I think this is a great conference. It's coming up February the 24th. Well, Evan, just tell us where it's all at, where is it going to take place and all the different details.
Yeah, so I guess one of the things that I think is really cool about our region, right, is we're all working together as a Green River group of agents, and there's, what, seven or eight of us doing the math. But for a couple of times a year, we incorporate those agents across the river in Purdue Extension, and this is one of those programs that we do that in, and I love that about it. The first 2 years we held this in Kentucky, it's an every other year program just due to cost and trying to get speakers and whatnot. But this year, it was Indiana's turn to host it. They've got a brand new venue over there. It's called the Freedman Center. It's at Freedman Park is where it is. It's the event center there. It's in Newburgh, so it's just right across the river from Henderson. Really look forward to that deal. I think it. So in Kentucky, we always had Indiana producers kind of trickle across the river for that thing. I hope we get to see the same thing with our Kentucky guys going to Indiana. It's actually very close to us in this region. And for the quality of the education, I think that we'll get there that night. I think it's well worth the drive. Doing everything that we can to prevent COVID spread there that night and all those things that are hot topic concerns, of course. But I think it'll be a good melting pot of producers.
So if somebody wants to register for this, if they want to attend, so how do they need to do that? You want to talk about the registration process, fees, or anything like that?
Yeah, so there is a registration fee with this one. It's $25 a person. That includes your meal that night. And just back up real quick, we're going to start registering people at 5 o'clock on the 24th, okay? We encourage people to pre-register just due to food. Like, if you want to guarantee yourself supper that night, least, if nothing else, give us a call and say, hey, we're coming, you know. But all the extension offices in Kentucky and all the ones in Indiana have access to our trifold now. And so you can go to your local extension office if you're listening to this from far away and ask them for a trifold for the Midwest Beef Summit. Inside that trifold is a registration form with instructions on where to send it or who to call and reserve your spot. And so our friends in Indiana are handling that this time due to the venue being over there. But all the Purdue Extension information is there, as well as our schedule and our speaker bios. All that will be in that trifold.
But they can pay at the door if they need to. Just call and let you know.
Absolutely.
If
absolutely. If you'll call and let us know, you'll get the pre-registration cost, okay. and we'll make that happen.
And the reason I bring that up is you had mentioned COVID guidelines. You know, I think sometimes folks are a little anxious about committing to something very far out because we have learned over the last 2 years how quickly things can change. But we don't want to discourage those folks from coming if they couldn't pre-register until the day of or maybe 2 days before.
Absolutely. And honestly, we've got speakers coming a good distance away. And so we want to use their time wisely. And And so we need to justify the event and the conference and the cost of the conference, you know, through those pre-registrations. And so that's one of the reasons that we encourage people to do that.
How long has this conference been going on, Evan?
So this is the third session. 2018, we're on, yeah, 2018 would have been the first one there in Owensboro. We had two in Owensboro, and now this one's gone.
Yeah, I went to the one in 2018. That's the only one I've been to. But I can say that there was a lot of information covered, but it was very thorough. A lot of people got a lot of information, good information from it.
Yeah, we've kind of, I guess to me, Jay, it's always been appropriate for me to make one for those higher-end producers that are really wanting to stretch their educational boundaries a little bit. We get in fairly deep, you know, in this conference, and I like that about it. And it's not a deal to where you shouldn't be offended or worried that you're not going to be able to go and understand, because our speakers do a phenomenal job transmitting that information and putting it into a real-world package that you can take home and plug in that night. And that first conference, I think, really set the tone for that, because, honestly, there was some pretty high-end stuff discussed there that night. But yet, even me going home, you know, I got to think about some of that stuff. And it was put in a practical format to where I could take that information home that night, analyze cows, analyze my operation, and try to get better. And fortunately, I think we've got two speakers that will continue to follow that trend. And
Evan, tell us a little bit about your speakers and maybe the topics and a little bit about.
Yep. So we've got an industry speaker this time in Dr. Patrick Gunn. Patrick works for Purina Animal Nutrition. He is in their beef tech support, or beef tech consultant, I think is actually what his title is. He's really focusing on forages and how to supplement alongside your forages when needed, if needed, whatnot, which I think when we're talking about cow carrying cost and stretching that grass, I think that's really high on the list, right? And so the other one is a guy that I've been listening to now for, probably 6 or 8 years, and tried to get him back for the last one, and it just didn't work, is Dr. Jared Decker. Dr. Decker works for the University of Missouri. They're in Columbia, but he's done a lot of research in Kentucky, and his research has been on hair shedding in cattle. And maybe that's a topic that maybe isn't on the newsstand all the time, right? But when we think about selecting genetics for our environment and using genetic tools appropriately to select for our environment, there's no guy out there better off suited to talk about that than Dr. Decker. And I'm excited that he's coming back. And working with producers on how to use those EPD profiles to select for your operation, not just outputs, right? I mean, typical cow herd on the registered side, we're tracking anywhere from 18 to 27 traits now. And then we've got a DNA component on top of that. And so Dr. Decker is looking at DNA profiles of where cows in our area, it's progressively getting warmer. I think even though it's been cold as all get out, right? It's progressively getting warmer, and so how do we get cows to shed hair earlier? Which cows retain heat or retain hair and therefore elevate their body temperature, and then we lose weight, we lose reproductive efficiency, all those things. Dr. Decker's found a DNA profile to where we can start selecting cattle to shed hair quicker, therefore lowering our cost and making cattle more adaptable. And so it's...
Yeah, and if you're not in the show cattle business, hair doesn't mean squat. Really, I mean, you know, from a standpoint of you want to get that hair shedded off, you know, and get those, you want those cattle to stay as cool as possible in the summertime because of the fescue toxicosis and all the things that we have going on here in Western Kentucky. You want them to be able to shed that hair quicker, to stay cooler, to mitigate that effects of that fescue toxicosis.
You know, I think it's so cool. And springtime is, for me, it's like that dead time between before you're starting to cut hay and stuff, but cows are out on grass and you got a chance to breathe, right? And maybe hogs messed that up for me a little bit, but you got a little bit of a chance to breathe there and really sit back and evaluate cows. And it's really cool to watch cows those cows that are shedding hair earlier than those other ones in the herd that are managed identical, right? The effects of hide color on the cow herd, and is there a monetary value to hide color in the cows? And there is.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. When you're selling calves, there is.
There is. All right. Okay, so that's an output, right? Yeah. Typically, black hides in our country bring more money. Are black hides the most efficient on the farm? And the answer is no. Okay, and so now all of a sudden we need a red cow with a black calf. Can we do that? Every time. You know, but we can do that through the tools that we have available now. And honestly, every producer can implement those things today with resources that we have in our state. We just got to be, we've got to have a plan. We've got to have a goal to be able to minimize cost on the cow side and increase those outputs.
I think it's you know, listening to you talk and discussing these type of changes, it reminds me that in any operation, you know, you can make just a couple of changes and make a huge difference on the other side.
Sure.
And I think that's something we don't always think about, the whole picture, you know, and whether that be in livestock or whether it be in grain production for that matter. I mean, but it's those little changes that we make along the way and not trying to do a whole redo, you know, in 1 year, but it makes such a huge difference on the bottom line.
I've said for years that if folks took as much time in their cattle herd as far as management goes compared to what they try to in corn and beans, It's an enterprise just like corn and beans and wheat and those type things. And if we take as much time with management in that, we would still be able to make money.
Realizing that every management decision you make is just that, a management decision.
Right.
It's going to have an impact on your output, as Evan was saying.
Yep.
It's one of those things. It's really one of the things that I love to do is mate cows, right? And so we're trying to mate the right bull on top of the right cow. We're doing it on an individual basis at home, but commercial guys can't particularly do that. But the implications of that decision that you make today will be realized over the next 10 to 12 years. Okay, if I pick the wrong seed corn variety, I'm into it for what, 6-7 months? Right. And then I'm done.
Right.
And I've learned my lesson, I can move on. Not here, you know. And honestly, the technology that is coming to the marketplace, especially on DNA, on the DNA component of this, we have probably picked up some of that gap that we lost against the row crop as far as implementing technology and those things. We've probably gained a lot of that back, but it's built into the EPD profile to where we don't exactly see it. But one of the things, and you guys are the same way, you know, we get these professional improvement dollars built into our budget every year to go out and make us better agents, right, and try to learn something to bring back. And I use mine every year to go to the Beef Improvement Federation conference, and it travels around the country. But it's 3 days of listening to the smartest people in the world talk to one another. There should be no reason that I'm there, right? But if I can go and I can listen to one or two sentences and understand what they're talking about, you know, and then come back and try to relate that to Kentucky beef cattle, that's what we try to do. And honestly, that's where our speakers from the Beef Summit come from, and that's where the idea from it was really, really founded, was going to that Beef Improvement Federation meeting and trying to understand how to plug those back into a cow-calf herd here in Kentucky. So,
well, you know, every week we try to come up with a topic of discussion, and we've kind of rolled right into ours here. Our discussion this week is matching your beef herd's genetics to your environment. That's exactly what you had moved right on into. You know, when you first look at that topic, I think a lot of producers tend to think on the macro level. They think of, well, you know, heat tolerance in herds down south and dealing with the fescue toxicosis issues like we have around here. Really, we can get much more detailed and much more involved than just those macro type decisions. You talked about hide color, you know, on the cow versus the hide color of the calf that you market. I think that's a big, big one that folks just don't take a initial look at that much, and it would be one of the easiest things to change to influence the efficiency of that cow.
Yeah, it's easy, but at the same time, it's hard, right? Because technically, red is recessive, okay? And so it takes two wrongs to make a right, is what I always tell people when we're dealing with recessive genes. But So these cows, you know, hybrid vigor, when we talk about hybrid vigor, I don't know that there's a geneticist out there in the world that wouldn't claim that hybrid vigor is one of the most economically important things that we can instill in a cow herd.
Especially to a commercial producer.
Absolutely. But when we drive across the countryside, we're pretty one-dimensional for the most part in cows. Yeah, we see some color out there, right? But at the end of the day, they're predominantly Angus cows. They've been Angus on Angus on Angus for a long time. And so now the question is, have we built an Angus cow that's right for our environment? Maybe some have really selected for those things and done that. But if we've got producers using AI programs, right, and we're using bulls from all across the country and actually all across the world, well, some of them bulls weren't selected to thrive on fescue in 110-degree weather. I'll just tell you, you know, if it gets 115 in North Dakota, you know, it's been a bad day, right? And so we see a lot of those genetics coming down here. But I think at the end of the day, I think the underlying point is, once again, setting a goal for your operation, much like you would do in a row crop deal. You know, you'd say, I got to make 200 bushel to the acre to make the bank happy, right? Well, same thing with our cow-calf operation. We've got to show so many dollars return to the acre. And how do we do that? Or do we do it on outputs alone? And I don't think the answer there is yes by any means. I think it's a combination of outputs and managing cost. And that's where managing cost is really where the genetics part of it comes in.
We've always said that one of the most limiting factors to a beef operation was that cost of stored feed. Yeah. Well, that's just one thing. And there's a lot of other things that we can look at that have to be managed on that input side.
I was thinking about this yesterday. I was telling somebody, like, our hog operation at home is easy. It's pretty easy for me to quantify a sow carrying cost for the year, because they're on concrete in an acre, right? I can tell you within plus or minus 1 square foot of how many square feet they have to roam, right? We've got 130 acres that cows are running out on, and it's a devil of a time, me even knowing what all my costs are, to really, truly put a cow carrying cost to that. And then to be able to break it down on an individual basis is really impossible, but to move the population and to get the herd better, we've got to figure out those individuals that are doing it and replicate those, right? And so, man, it makes it so hard. And it's really hard for producers, especially if David and I were neighbors and we wrote the same checks every single day, but he drove a red tractor and I drove a green one, okay? His parts... Seriously. I mean, you think about just the minute difference there. All right, we could have went and bought the same horsepower tractor on the same day, and at the end of the year, our cow carrying costs are vastly different because of that one decision. And that's not a pro or con against green or red paint. Okay, that's just the honest truth about it. It's just one decision really, really changes your cow carrying cost. And I think I had a producer the other day in Breckenridge County I was talking to. And they leased a farm for $12,000 a year. Well, on its face, that doesn't sound too unreasonable, right? But when we really get down to it, there's 80 acres of grass there. It's $133 an acre, plus or minus, and it takes 2.5 acres to run a cow. Now we're at $325 to buy the ground to walk around on before we fertilized it or hauled out a bale of hay with tractor in the above. And so that $200 cow carrying cost that we often heard about out in the countryside doesn't exist at that point. And so that cow carrying cost at the end of the year might be $600 or $700 when it's all said and done. But those are things that when we make those knee jerk decisions, that, man, they have a lifelong implication at the
end. I talked to Kenny Burdine up in Lexington back in December, and the one of the comments that he made, I was actually doing an interview with him, and he said that he said, when I go to all these meetings, I ask people, you know, what's your cow carrying cost? Or he says, a show of hands of how many people actually know their cow carrying costs. And he said, there may be 3 people in the room. And he said, 2 of them are lying. You know, so most folks don't know. But it's not only a genetics decision that works in this area. I mean, the environment, you know, genetics, feed cost, you know, fertilizer costs, all of those things that you make management decisions on a daily basis are what going to affect your cow carrying cost, and in effect affects your bottom line.
And you know, that's probably one of the first places a producer should start when they start thinking along those lines, is every cow is, the profitability of a cow varies from animal to animal to animal, and being able to learn that and discern what cows are profitable versus what ones are not, and then look at those traits that makes a profitable cow versus an
You know, growing up, I was on every livestock judging team that one of Ferquin's friends, Terry Burks, could shove me on, right? And I'll forever be grateful for that, because we look at those things with our eyes and we can see some – we can determine efficiency by the eye, right? And we've got a cow that's limping. Well, guess what? She's not near as efficient as the one that's good-footed and running around playing like a calf, right? But at the same time, we've learned now that we've got to manage those cows with data. I tell everybody it's almost like taking the farming out of farming to some extent, right? But I've got more Excel spreadsheets now than I ever have in my life, and I would say that would change again tomorrow. But we've got to really start managing those cows with data and understanding our costs with data. It's, you know, just in mineral. You know, I think about our cattlemen's up there, we blend a mineral that's really expensive when we look at it on a per bag cost. But then we start looking at potential returns from that, and all of a sudden it's cheaper than the cheap mineral. And so
you get what you pay for.
That's right. But it takes data and it takes an understanding to be able to do that. And if we're just throwing a mineral out once a month and wishing them the best of luck, the only thing that we really see is the price tag at the end of the day. And so it takes somebody that's pretty astute that can watch mineral consumption, things like that, and keep records. We talk, how many times a day do you tell people to keep records in your job, right? I mean, it's like, I wish I had one of them little recorders, you know, and I could just sit there and honestly, I need to do that for myself every single day too, right? But just those everyday decisions, man, they just have a huge implication on the cow-calf on the enterprise profitability at the end of the
day. You know, it's makes me think of back when I first started, back a few years back, we had it was in 2001, but we had a master cattleman, and that first session, you know, they had them to write down, why do you have cows? Why are you in the cattle operation? And, you know, we read over those, and I was surprised at the answers, because a lot of the answers were, I like looking out my window and seeing the cows out there. And I think, I'd like to know how much that has shifted since 2001, Evan, to, you know, it's nice to look out there. I'm sure you like to look out and see the cows out your window too, but you know, how much it's changed over the years with the increase in input cost. I mean, even if you're just one of those minimal management operations, you know, but still how expensive it is. And if it's how, if folks now are paying more attention to that, I mean, and you can probably speak to that. I think I have seen that they are, cause I get a lot more questions, but is that still the overall reason, because I like to see my cows out when I look out my kitchen window?
You know, since I graduated high school in 2002, I'm just playing with you. But you know, in all seriousness, I think, you know, there is some romanticizing to this on enterprise, right? And so when you watch TV or you listen to the Paul Harvey thing, you know, and they're bottle feeding baby calves and rubbing them on their head, or somebody's out riding their horse out in the pasture looking at cows. And so we see that romantic outlook. We don't see people sitting at home in front of a computer crunching numbers, you know. I mean, you just don't see that. And
Or working them in the ice storm.
Yeah. Yeah, or trying to thaw waters or any of the above. And I think, honestly, Vicki, I think you're onto something to some extent. I think there is something aesthetically pleasing to that. And then there's, you know, we'll have those comments like, well, it keeps me from having to bush hog. Okay. You know, if that's, at the same time, you know, why do you play golf? You know, I like it, or it gives me something to do with my time. That's fine, you know, but if we're going to look at it as a business, as an enterprise, then we it changes the game drastically as to what we have.
Yeah, I think so. And you know, when you have a son that's a banker, and you sit down with him and go through this, you know, he brings me all these spreadsheets, and all these spreadsheets have these numbers on them that I can't see. They're so small, you know, and this got packed with information, you know, and he's sitting here saying, we got to do this better, we got to do this better, and they got to do this better. You know, you really don't think about that. I'm not the aesthetically pleasing kind of guy, but I like to make money, you know, and I depend on those cattle to make money. So, you know, when you sit down with somebody like that, that he's all in on the record keeping you know, analyzing why we didn't make money doing this practice or that practice, you know, it does make a difference, big difference.
I think, too, that's probably why on some operations, when they name them and all of that, you know, that really hurts on the profitability side because they're not willing to maybe cull those that are not making money for you. And you know, that's a big part of that operation. But when the reason you have cattle is because you like to look at them outside your kitchen window, you're not as apt to want to look at that aspect of it.
Let's think about the percentage of our producers that fall into that category. We, you know, when you think about beef producers, the majority of them, of the ones we work with nowadays, have off-farm employment. And that is their relaxation, if you will. That is their
hobby
golf bag.
Almost.
Yeah,
I mean,
right. That's
it
what
is.
I'm saying.
I mean, I think for some people,
but,
it's a
but they're still.
I call it.
Well, absolutely. That's exactly.
Hey,
that's exactly
right.
I call it therapy sometimes, depending on what I'm doing.
Right. But we may not mention.
When you think
to talk about what you call it sometimes.
When you think about the product that those producers are putting out, it's going into our food supply, just like the commercial cow calf producer is in any other part of the country, and they need to be thinking about producing that best product. Because of where it ends up, we're still a consumer-driven industry.
Well, I was having a phone conversation on the way over here this morning, and we were talking about just the sale of livestock through the stockyards. You know, there's some emotionally based decisions going on there. And honestly, when we do cull cow talks, cull cow marketing, I talk about Old Bessie a lot. You know, and Old Bessie's the one that always eats apples out of my hand, this, that, and the other, and comes up to the gate and licks on me, and she ain't had a calf in 8 years, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And so we talk about the cost of keeping Old Bessie around, you know. I mean, it's but I think you're exactly right, Vicky. There's an emotional attachment to it, and that's fine if that's your gig. But you can't have those.
And you can't have 10 of those, you know. I know that kind of winding this down, I'll tell a little story along those lines. Is I've been working with a farm family here for the last several years and trying to, you know, help them. They say they're city folks that moved to the country, and they've been great to work with because they just want to learn. They're a sponge. But when we sat down at the table and was going through their herd and everything, they got to one and it said, now this is Susie, and Susie will never leave the farm. And so on all of the records, Susie's in there with notes. Susie will not leave the farm, regardless of what happens. And even though the records are saying Susie needs to leave the farm, but that was important to that family, though. And it was, but it was one. And so, you know, but that is a real thing, you know, on these operations. And gosh, we could go on, Evan, for hours about discussions like this, but we do appreciate you coming and talking to us, not only about the Beef Summit, but just about the cattle industry and managing the cattle and you know, just discussions on how to make improvements. And we appreciate you coming. So, folks, if you want to come to the Midwest Beef Summit, we'd love to have you. You know, call to register or...
Yeah, call your local extension office, whether you're in Indiana, whether you're in here in Western Kentucky, kind of, you know, those
wherever.
Folks will be able to get you that information.
Right. Sure. Evan mentioned earlier, we've all got the trifold, and that's what you need to ask for so that you know who to contact and make sure you get the information to the right places.
Yep.
Especially, as he said, if you want to make sure you have
been an awesome experience sitting down with three very experienced agents and I continue to look to you guys for guidance as I continue down this path. I think I call at least one of the three of you about once a week asking what
that,
I did wrong.
That will not be edited out. We will make sure that leaves it. Well, this week's timely tip, we always try to give a tip to our producers of something that's pertinent to the time frame that we're all operating in right now. And Vicki's going to talk to us a little bit about reviewing our certification.
Yeah, so this is a time of year that, you know, we're going to be quickly on the spring season is going to be upon us. And so this is a time you really need to look at the certifications that you're going to need. And in the pesticide world these days, it seems like every year we've got a new certification, a new training we got to go to if you intend to use that product. And so, you know, be looking at your private applicator certification. If that has expired, you need to be, contacting your local extension office and see when those trainings are going to be to make sure you get that up to date. You don't want to be trying to buy your pesticides and realize that you can't buy them because you don't have your certification up to date. You know, another one that comes to mind in our part of the world is dicamba. If you're going to use that, there is a specific training. Those are online now or they're in person. So it's relatively easy to attend a training, but you need to make sure you've got that up to date. Paraquat is another one. That is one that's only online. So Gramoxone is the name that we hear you're going to see on the container. But, make sure that if you intend to use that product to just those certifications. So just check that out and make sure you're ready to go here. And cause in another month it'll be go time.
Yeah. I think that Gramoxone is a different kind of jug and you have to have some adapters to put on your tank
to
and
be able to get
things.
Into it.
Yeah.
Right.
Just to get into it.
It is completely self-contained now. Yeah. You can no longer buy that in a, yep. 2.5-gallon jug.
So you need to make some plans ahead of time. This is all about planning ahead of time. So that's one of the things you need to think about.
That's exactly right. This is the best time to make sure you have all your bases covered.
That sounds good. Well, I want to thank everybody for being a part of this today. We want to make sure and thank Evan again for and our host for this week's information. And thanks to our listeners for joining in. We hope you've enjoyed our show and will make plans to join us again for our next episode. And until then, remember, Kentucky Ag matters.